Hello, and welcome to another segment of Open House here at Community Media. I'm Raymond Galker. I'll be your host, and we bring people from our community into the station who are doing awesome things for our community, the York and Adams County community. And we're not going to let you down today because we have Ben Neely with us, who is the president and CEO of the York County Historic Center. Is that correct?
The York County History Center.
History. The York County History Center. Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, that is interesting, Ben, when we first got to know you. And, you know, you have the Adams County Historic Society, you have the Hanover Historic Society,
yes,
but you don't have the York Historic Society. You have the York County History Center.
Yes.
Can you explain why this is somewhat different in name?
Sure, yeah. The organization started in 1895 and was the Historical Society of York County, and ran under that name for, I think, over a century, before the organization started to merge with other smaller museum entities in the city of York, and began to run under the name the York County Heritage Trust. And the problem was, folks thought they were a bank. So,
and they came for loans.
They wanted to make another change here to kind of clarify exactly what the organization was. And they didn't take it back to using the word society, because there was a lot of talk. You know, it started a while ago. I'd say it started about 15 years ago or more, where folks started to, in our field, focus on the word society and think, you know, that kind of implies an exclusivity at an organization that is actually meant for everyone. And so a lot of organizations began to make that change over from a historical society to a history center. It's a very common way that they solved that. But it's tough for organizations to change a name that they've had for over 100 years. That doesn't come easy. So, and even in our organization, some folks will still refer to it as the society because that's how they knew it growing up. And it's just ingrained in them. But for the most part, folks that have been introduced to us in the, you know, in the past 10 years or so, they've become accustomed to knowing us as the History Center.
And it's not just York. It's the county.
It is
York
the county.
County.
Yes.
So you had many different interests that were dealing with history, mm-hmm, and what you tried to do is bring everybody together to share the same message and celebrate the culture.
We do. We try to be a reflection of the people of York County. And now our collections, and this is also a common thing, particularly in county, you know, I'll just say county historical societies, is that the collections have a kind of a natural bias towards the county seat. And that's because that is where a lot of the business was done. It's where records are being generated. It's, you know, where a concentration of wealth is typically located. And they're the folks that have enough to have an heirloom that gets passed down versus somebody who doesn't have as much needs to use it until it no longer has any use whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And so that is certainly true of our collection and our work and folks associated with the organization long before I arrived on the scene. I've only been there 8 months now, so I can't take credit for any of
that. There you go. Can't blame me.
But we really work hard to try to not only make sure we're getting a representation of areas of York outside of the city, but also trying to keep up with the changing demographic, the immigration patterns of the last 100 or so years. We've changed the face again, and we need to figure out how to connect all these different folks that have come to call this area home, have a common thread that runs through their story, and we want to make sure that we're highlighting that, you know.
Ben, that's an interesting concept, is that your organization, I hear you say, is not static.
No.
You think of okay, you're an organization that deals with history.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how far back, is the question. But you're saying, history is this moment and beyond.
That's right.
But also, do you look to the future at the same time?
We do. And so we'll collect things that you wouldn't normally think of. That's not an artifact. I grew up with that, but it will be. And so we try to do is, to the best of our ability, is to collect items that, you know, represent a story or a theme. We try to collect items that also talk to one another in some way, that together tell a story versus something that's sort of isolated. And we do that because we're trying to figure out the people who have our jobs 100 years from now, if they could be here with us today, would they want us to take that? Is that going to be important to them one day? And we do our best to make those decisions based on what we feel was important from 100 years ago, and being able to collect in the moment why these things are still more commonly available is, it's nice because they're commonly available, but it's also hard because then they feel common. So it's...
Can you give me an example of something current?
It might be...
A theme or...
Something that was more recent we collected, and this only goes back to maybe the 60s. Or, you know, I'm going to come even closer. We have, it's going to be unveiled later this spring, the sign, the neon sign from the Modern Air Hotel. And I still have a lot to learn about that hotel's history, but I thought it was interesting. We have that, and also Lee's Diner, which was on Route 30. The building's still there. Mm-hmm. We have that sign too, which is being restored, will also be on display in one of our museum venues there in New York. And some folks, I would understand if they looked at that and thought, what are you doing with that old sign? You know, but for a lot of folks, seeing that evokes a feeling and a memory, and standing there with maybe children or grandchildren allows them to, you know, gives them a prompt to share a memory that otherwise might not have been on the tip of their tongue to share. But they see the Modern Air and go, oh my gosh, I got to tell you this thing that happened. And so I think it's neat for people to see that. And I also like sometimes where it affects, like, well, if that's history, you know what might also be important? And that can spark some really great conversation too that helps us in our collecting.
So, you know, when you look at that sign, you look at, you're thinking about other places like that.
Yeah.
You're thinking about diners.
Yes.
And you're thinking about, okay, at one point there were diners, but there wasn't McDonald's.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
So you're trying to capture a theme, like you said.
Yes.
Or a story, or a life experience that people shared.
That is exactly it. Is trying to get somebody to come into a museum and walk out knowing this person was born on this date and they died on this date, and these facts, which I find fascinating, you know, I'm more concerned when I see, when I'm looking at what are we going to do for the visitor experience? I want them to understand what it felt like. I want them, if we're going to do a manufacturing exhibit, you know, of course we're going to include that information. You know, this technology started at this date, it evolved, and at this date it became obsolete. But I really want them to understand that technology might be the grandparent to something. This big machine might be the grandparent to something that's just this wee little device maybe in their pocket now. It's that these things mattered, that these things that existed at a time before they were on this earth impacted their lives, and that they're able to make those connections.
And it impacted the community.
Absolutely.
In many different ways.
Yes. Seeing some of this, it can give pride, you know, folks that, you know, community pride, which I hope that we're able to foster in these exhibits, that someone might look and realize that their family or people of their culture built this and ran this, and it was such a central part of their lives, and that it brought them pleasure, or it was very difficult, and so that they can relate to it that way, and start to develop a sense of place and time.
Well, here's a tough one, though.
Okay.
Making the connection. Mm-hmm. My beliefs, my motivations, my values, are they the same as they were in the 60s? Are they the same as 1776?
Right.
I mean, what relationship, what connection from the heart do I have with people from the 250th anniversary who lived there, you know? I mean, not the anniversary, but the people 250 years ago. Mm-hmm. How do you do that?
It can be difficult because you're sometimes looking at people that lived exactly where we're living today and occupying the space that we now did in a very different world. They can seem so foreign. And they did things that we would never accept today. But for them, it was all they knew. And we might be talking about slavery when I say that. We could be talking about enduring pain. Now, if we get hurt, we can go get some Tylenol, some ibuprofen, and get that. But that wasn't, you didn't have that expectation of relief from some kind of ailment 200 plus years ago. So there's lots of different ways, and big and small, with which we are different. And I think what's important is to look at this, because doing local history too, there's another element, is we're talking about sometimes our own ancestors, right? And we want our ancestors to be good people. We want to focus on it in a certain way, but that doesn't always translate into good history, you know, not a complete history. So I think it's important that when we come to interpreting another time, that we do so honestly, that we follow what the documentation shows us. I think it is often difficult, but judging them based on things that we know now or and how culture has developed now, we have to look at that. These are the lessons learned, you know, instead of like, these were terrible people. Look at how much we learned. We would never do that now. I don't feel that way about whatever it might be now because of all these things that we have learned since that time.
You were sharing pretty much looking at the past and making judgments based on the future cultural beliefs and values. And you're saying more or less that we have to have a different lens.
We do. Yeah. As we judging these people, you know, any by their actions in a certain time, based on all of our values and knowledge today, isn't really going to be fair, you know, to those people. It's not that in some, if we're talking about something where wickedness was done, it doesn't mean we're excusing it or even forgiving it, depending on, you know, if we're looking at genocide. But if we're looking at it in the far distant past, we have to look at all the different factors involved. And what did these people know? What world did they grow up in? And judging them based on things they didn't know or were never taught, you know, it doesn't translate to good history.
And Ben, this is scary, because they're going to be judging us someday.
Absolutely.
And you kind of wonder, what do we do that is acceptable and common, which really, years from now, they may seem as nasty, or maybe they would see us as being naive.
Absolutely. I think all of that is going to happen. There's all the things that we judge, that I typically hear judged in the past, we're still doing it. We still have one culture that will dominate another. You know, we still see absolute wickedness. And we see things where people do things en masse where we just can't figure out, we can't relate to it. Mm-hmm. And so it's all still happening. So one day, absolutely, folks in the distant future are going to look back and they're going to think, what in the world? What would drive those people to do that? How could they not see fill in the blank, whatever it might be?
Especially when you look at the world, you know, mm-hmm. because certain things we think people wouldn't do anymore.
Right.
But it's still
happening.
I guess humans are humans.
We are. And that is one of the things when you look at the people with all these, they're still humans. They still have emotions. You still have heroes and you do have villains, and we will 100 years from here, you know.
Mm-hmm. And when we look at the 1700s mm-hmm. in this area, what was the motivation?
I think it's survival. I mean, we're looking, you're at the frontier. You're folks that have left a home, crossed an ocean, and have come here, and it has to work. They don't have the resources. They hardly had the resources to come here. Some of them didn't, had to indenture themselves to make it happen. Others were forced, you know, and were slave labor. It has to work. And so you're going to do things that you might not otherwise have done back at home, because it is about survival. And then you're looking out for your own, and you will do things at the cost of others. And that is unfortunately something that has played itself out since humans started to get up on 2 feet and walk about.
Yeah. Yep. And could happen again.
Absolutely.
You never know, you know, possibly what would happen. But, you know, now you're looking at this area in the early 1700s. Mm-hmm. What can you enlighten us on in this area? Because in a way, you have Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
then you had Lancaster, then you had York, and there was no Adams County.
Right.
Was there a York County at that time?
Let's see, York County comes, well, the city of York is 1741. And I think it's 1768 for the county. But we should probably check that.
See, 49. That,
49 for the county?
49, okay. 50.
Okay.
Because it was 1 year different with Cumberland.
Okay, 1749 for York County.
And that's the benefit of having...
yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, that's really helpful,
that.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad
you're there for that, yeah. And what we're seeing for the, you know, why is there a York County? It's because population is pushing out. And you imagine at that time, you now need to go to the city to conduct some kind of business, say maybe a legal transaction. And now you have to go from York and make it back to Lancaster. It's not feasible. I mean, not at that time and not at certain times of the year at all to try to cross the Susquehanna. We weren't driving across the Wright's Ferry Bridge. So you get to a point where you need to break it off and create another county. And same, that's the birth of Adams as well. It became too much if you're going to try to do something and you're living out in, you know, the what's now Adams County to try and make it back to York, the city of York, to conduct business like that. It's better off to have a new county seat and a new courthouse and form of government there, and they selected Gettysburg.
And it was tough for Lancaster too, because they were still growing, and
sure.
then they had to deal with the York County stuff.
Yes.
So I think that one of the interesting things that I learned from the New Oxford Historic Society was, you know, this whole progression. The whole idea of this being woods and paths.
Yeah.
The whole idea of, you know, as things grew from the early 1700s to Wrightsville. Wrightsville, great place to go, great place to visit. But people were there for weeks waiting to cross it.
Right.
So just imagine what that town was like, having all those people just coming and staying for a couple weeks. And that town adjusting to that.
Sure.
You know, people having beds for them, people having food for them.
Right.
I mean, were there big parties? I mean, they were camping out. I mean,
sure.
I could just imagine what that was like.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's one of those things they would have accepted at the time because there was no other way. That's what travel was like.
Mm-hmm.
But it is also what drove the developing of you know, better road systems and eventually, you know, canal systems and then the railroad and mm-hmm. so on and so forth was to, because people were tired of waiting by the Susquehanna River for 2 weeks mm-hmm. before it was safe to cross.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had to live in a different world. It was moving, starting to move at a faster and faster pace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the motivation for people to leave their home country
yes.
was sometimes persecution, sometimes adventure. There was a different type of person that would do that. There was a different type of person that would live in New Oxford, in York, when it was a frontier area.
Right.
With different values. Does that affect the type of people who we are now?
Oh, I think it does. I think it absolutely does. I think we still see, you know, they came here and they, you know, we can see it in the churches. You know, what faiths are here? They're still here, what they brought with us. We're still eating Fosnots. You know, there's food traditions, there's faith, there's certain things, and how often do we hear something, you know, where someone blames their Scotch-Irish ancestry for some personality trait, you know, or they're, you know, that's the PA German in me.
And I think they're secretly justifying the fact that they like being that way.
I'm sure you're right.
I could be that way.
Yes.
I'm Scottish.
It
right?
makes it okay.
Yeah. So what is unique about the York County Historic Center?
I think what is nice, we actually have multiple museum sites, all within close proximity of one another. So we have, you know, our History Center Museum that we opened about a year and a half ago that was a labor of love from my predecessor, Joan Mummert, who she led a team of people through every conceivable challenge that could be thrown at somebody trying to run a capital campaign to build a cultural institution. And they made it happen. So, and what we have there is an incredible overview of York County's history. And we look at early settlers, we look at the American Revolutionary era, we look at the development of technology, manufacturing, agriculture that took place in York, and share some of the culture, share some of the modern day things like York peppermint patties and such that, you know, and Martin's potato chips and all this that are coming out of this area are all in that museum. And so it's a really neat experience, and it uses a number of different methods of storytelling to share all of those themes. Then we have a colonial complex on site. And so that is, it's, I think, one of my favorite things, because I remember years and years driving through York and passing those buildings, and I was fascinated with them, and I never imagined they'd be such an important part of my life one day.
Mm-hmm.
But we have, there at its core, we have a tavern, the Golden Plow Tavern, which was built in 1741. And it had been all sorts of things over the years before being restored back to its original tavern appearance in 1968 or thereabouts. Adjoining that is a house that we refer to as the Gates House, because Horatio Gates, General Horatio Gates, during the American Revolution, during that period that York, the city of York, Yorktown at the time, was the, you know, functioning as the capital of the United States, he stayed in that house. Across the street on the corner, we have a replica of the original courthouse in York that was once in the center of what we now call Continental Square, intersection of Market Street and George Street. we have this reproduction courthouse, which I think it was built in 1976. It's a gift, I think, to the community from the Bicentennial Commission at the time, mm-hmm. that we still use all year round. This building is incredible to come in and teach lessons in it. And then also on that site, we have a cabin built in around 1813, belonged to a gentleman named Barnett Bob that had originally built just a few blocks up the road and was moved down to that site to save it. And so that's our colonial complex. And then just a few more blocks down the road, we have our Agricultural Industrial Museum. And that is filled with, you know, we have one area called the Hall of Giants because we have giant things in that. But you can go in there and it's everything from tobacco industry, trains, there's an airplane, there's fire engine in there, working rotary phone system. So that you can use in that. Kids don't know how to use that stuff, you know. So that, I think that's a neat experience. And then we have another nearby museum that is a fire museum. That it's in a 1903 firehouse, original firehouse. It's incredible. Still even in the concrete floor inside the firehouse where the trucks are now parked are the grooves from when it was horses. And they needed those grooves in order for horses to get the traction they needed to get going. Mm-hmm. You know, those kinds of architectural details are still in there, still original. So it's also a really neat place to visit.
You have a lot of assets that you have to take care of.
Yeah, that's the less fun part of it all.
Yeah.
Because the building maintenance is, and there's an article that just came out that was put out from one of the national museum bodies that said that it's something like over 85% of our cultural institutions, meaning museums, are really deeply underwater with deferred maintenance. Mm-hmm. And I wish we weren't part of that club, mm-hmm. but we certainly are. Mm-hmm. And it's a challenge because we have some of our buildings are really artifacts unto themselves. I mean, that 1741 tavern, that entire building is an artifact mm-hmm. that we need to take care of. And none of it is cheap. And then even in the more modern buildings, I'll tell you, nothing breaks the heart more when I hear that our elevator's down. Those are just very expensive repairs, but absolute necessity. So it's a challenge to be able to maintain the funding levels you need to do that. And then for us, we have it across a number of different sites, so it's amplified.
So you have an elevator that dates back to what time?
We have... I'm sure our elevators hopefully aren't that old, but we have elevators that they go back, many, many decades. Mm-hmm. They may be older than I am.
Mm-hmm. So, people, this should be like an amusement ride.
Certainly. You love adventure.
Yeah.
We have a couple. If you like to gamble, we have some elevators that will do that for you.
So, Ben, the interesting thing that you said is, reflection of the community.
Yes.
And, how that changes over time. When you think about York and you think different time periods, York, you think of Adams County, you think about agriculture.
Sure.
Well, same with York.
Yes.
I mean, you're not producing as much apples or fruit, possibly, but agriculture is a big part of your history. Still is.
Yes. Yes, it is.
But then the manufacturing, that's a huge area of York.
Yes.
And the engineers and the creativity of the people that had to been there in York to create some of the products that they originated.
Yes, yeah.
Not to mention Harley-Davidson.
Right. we have a nice piece from Harley-Davidson, too. We have a nice bike. Yeah, that's some of what we have on showcase, too. It's a technology that was built in York. And we try to explain why it's important. One of my favorite stories to tell once I had learned this going through our museum, we have this large ammonia compressor. It's huge. It's two stories tall. And actually, as big as it is, it's actually a baby model. But it, it built in York and had, you know, been used elsewhere, but manufactured here and is now back home. But this produced ice. Mm-hmm. And on the surface, I could see when I'm talking to people, they're like, okay, ice. But I tell them about, you know, we used to get our ice everywhere was by harvesting it off the Great Lakes. And in the late 1800s, we had a warm summer and not enough ice. Mm-hmm. And so what's happening then, what was happening was that food manufacturers who still need to get something on the shelf that has some kind of shelf life, they're putting all sorts of different chemicals, coloring agents and things. And then you just had things spoiling at a more rapid rate. People were getting sick, people were dying. And that technology, that ammonia compressor, that was to the rescue. That saved lives.
Now, are you saying that was built in York?
Yeah.
Was York one of the first manufacturers of ammonia compressors?
That I can't say that I know that.
But there was a division that did that.
Yeah, but they were manufacturing them here. Yeah, and that they could function and produce on a much grander scale than the model that we have on display. But I don't know how to move a bigger one in there.
Or do you probably want to?
No.
But you know, that's amazing. What are some other big industries that York should be known for?
I think the food industry, certainly. I mean, there's foods that, you know, not originally from the area, I had no idea, and I'll admit the silliest one was I'd mentioned the York peppermint patty. Mm-hmm. I didn't put that together mm-hmm. until I rounded the corner in our museum. I was walking around that big ammonia compressor, and then there's a display on the wall, and I saw a York peppermint patty, and I was like, oh, goodness sake.
Makes sense.
There
right?
it is, yeah, and Utz and all this. These are names that, you know, I saw in the grocery stores for years without... I just wanted some really good burger buns, so I'm getting Martin's potato roll.
Aren't they awesome?
You know what I mean? Oh my gosh, they're fantastic. And but you know, at the time, not really giving it much thought about where these things come from. But and then coming here and realizing, oh my gosh, this is from here. It's from the place I now live. Mm-hmm. Is pumping out these things that people are enjoying everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I think that's another really important industry to take a look at. Certainly food, so it's one of my favorite things to look at.
Was that your biggest surprise?
I think so. I think, yeah, looking at it, because it was the one that affected me the most directly, you know, that I saw day in, day out,
okay.
You know.
That you connected with.
Yeah, but there are others, like listening into some of our docents there that, you know, because everyone has a different thing that they're focused on. We have a couple of docents, they're retired engineers. And so they get, they're, you know, they look at companies that were born out of York, like Johnson Controls and such, you know, and other companies that built devices, you know, of which there's, you know, probably a piece manufactured in York that's now like on the International Space Station. I mean, that's the kind of impact that York is having here. Mm-hmm. I know another important story that is related to manufacturing is the York plan that was developed during World War II. And it was essentially, to distill the story down, is that the people of York came together and said, listen, we've got to produce for this country in order to win this war. And so they came together and they put together a plan where all these different companies were doing things that they didn't normally do, you know, shifting gears to produce what was necessary for the country and putting people to work. It was, you know, and it was an incredible model that began to be adopted and used in other places.
And that's because the community came together.
Because the community came together, yeah.
Is York a tight community right now?
I'd say, yeah. The degree of separation I have found is somebody going in there and trying to, you know, become part of the community and meet people. It seems to be about 2 degrees of separation versus 6 degrees of separation. Okay. Yeah, it is a tight community. Folks really, you know one another. What's great for me as a history person is the city, and in particular, where I spend most of my time, really cares about its legacy, its historical legacy. And you can see it going down the street and looking up at the buildings, different murals, signs that are posted on the building, the festivals that are held. It's something that's really incredible. I mean, even just our colonial complex, the fact that it still exists after all this time shows that this community cares about its history. And so for a history person, for a museum person, I mean, what a great environment it is to come and do historic interpretation.
York pride.
It is. It is pride. Mm-hmm. And it's pressure because you got to do it right. Yeah. You know, yeah. Someone tells you they're not interested in history, they don't care about history, just tell their story wrong.
Yeah.
And we will both learn a lesson.
Yeah. All historians support each other in that, don't they? They're quick to help you out.
They really are. That's one of the greatest things. I spend my time, you know, a lot of time fundraising, you know, and I'm going and I'm, you know, our local banks are always such a great resource for that. I'm sure that, you know, they're getting hit by everybody all the time, and it just shows you how generous they are. But I've also learned how competitive they are with one another, you know? And so that I'm not just picking on banks. You can imagine, you know, competition between Walmart and, say, Target and such that. But in the museum world, if I solve a problem today that is impacting, one of the first things I'm going to do is start sending it out to my colleagues going, hey, I figured this out here. And we call each other and share advice and very freely. You know, how can we support one another? It really is important. So I don't, I'm so fortunate I work in a field where I don't feel like I'm not competing. Anybody. How can we work together to benefit people?
Right.
That's what it's all about.
You have your own community historians, but don't they have a group that come together and just have talks or things like, I mean, you have historic talks. I mean, you probably arrange as a center.
Yes.
Historic talks.
We do.
But,
yeah.
You know, historians meet and amongst themselves, they talk.
Yes.
They enjoy.
Yes.
They enjoy the passion of their hearts.
Yes.
There's nothing like the passion of the heart of a historian, is there?
No, I love it. And you're right. You know, the people who spend their time on genealogy love to get together with other people doing genealogy to talk. And they share stories and they share tips and things that they've learned during the course of doing research to be able to dig deeper and learn more.
There's something about people who care about their past.
Yes.
People who don't have an anchor of culture, in a sense. Not that it's important for everybody to be that way.
Right.
But in a way, I think as a human, you have questions if you don't set out to answer them.
Yeah.
You know? Where am I from? You know, I'm Irish. No, you're not. Or, yes, you are.
Right.
There's something about knowing that you had a family member who settled in this area compared to another area or served in the military. And I know the New Oxford Historic Society has a program where people can come in and be directed to finding those answers. Do you have the same type of thing?
We do. And it's located at our new history center, although it's always been a very important component of the organization, but that's where it's located today. But it is a research library where you can go in and have access to books and documents, newspapers, maps, you name it. We have these things, we catalog them in the databases to try and make it easier to find. We also have incredible staff, but also incredible volunteers, people who really know their stuff and are very familiar with the collection, the kind of research that people commonly come in to do. They have a lot of experience in, so I always encourage people who might feel intimidated, saying, well, I've never done any research. I've never been to a place like that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about that. Just show up with your questions, and people will help you. and they are going to be so happy that you are there. It will make their day. So come in, and you're about to have a wonderful experience.
Because these people live to help people find out who they who they are, in a sense. I mean, it really gives you a sense of identity.
These folks could have been home binge-watching Netflix or out doing any numerous things, and what they decided to do was show up at the library so they could help somebody who walks through the door that day.
Do you have access to programs that are on the web for people to use?
We do. Like, we'll take subscriptions out, like Ancestry.com, Newspaper.com, these kinds of databases, so that if you're doing this kind of genealogy, one library is never going to take care of everything. Mm-hmm. But what we try to do is help you wring all the information you can out of your York County ancestry, and even, you know, I'd say regionally, you know, in the area. We want to answer as many questions for you as we can, and then we want to help you figure out, where is your next destination? What does the evidence point to that is your best bet to continue that journey?
250. Great opportunity.
Yes.
Well, what do you have to share for us with that?
You know, there's every organization like ours is really trying to make as much of this moment for the country as possible. And we've been talking about it for years, and Allison is like, it's here. Yeah. It's happening. And for us, you know, we're looking at it in New York. It's interesting because with our colonial complex and our tie to the American Revolution and the Continental Congress and the Articles of Confederation and the French Alliance, you know, these next few years are 250th of the Declaration, then 250th of the Articles, and then the 250th of the Alliance with France. So we want to make, but we talk about that stuff every day. So I'll get the question, what are you doing? And it's we've already had programming in place. What we're trying to do is use this moment to turn up the volume on this and to really make it as special as possible. And we really got kicked off last year with focusing on, we kind of looked at last year's Articles of Confederation weekend as this bounce-off moment for us. And so what we've done is we've rethemed a lot of, like, our summer camps is called Revolutionary Thinkers. And we're, you know, and our educators are using, you know, the American Revolution and the events and a lot of the local events here. Well, they're local to us, but they were national events. And use those and putting, you know, kids into a place where they have to make a really difficult decision. And to think about what that was like. Again, not trying to make everybody memorize all the dates and names and all this. What was it like? Is really important. So we are doing a new exhibit that is underway now, the design work on that, to open up this July, probably late June, but certainly before July 4th. And it's called Revolutionary York, and we're going to look at the, you know, local events that unfolded and how, you know, impactful those were. I mean, everyone, whether you're an American or not, this world was drastically different because of what happened in July of 1776. And the amount of cultural impact that it's continued to have as governments model themselves after the government that was born out of the American Revolution, it continues to reverberate, that stone in the pond from the 1770s here in the United States. That ripple effect is still happening.
We're still working on it.
Right,
and
yeah.
And we're still dealing with some of the same problems.
We are. Some of these things were so complex that here we are 250 years later, and we haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah.
You know?
I could talk about that, but I want to talk about the importance of York.
Yeah.
I mean, Philadelphia.
Right.
Boston. But York
right.
is right up there with them.
It is.
Really.
And it's something that I think I've been pleased that many locals are aware of it. You know, that it isn't something where I'm talking to somebody from York and I mention it, you know, that the Second Continental Congress had to come there and they think, Well, I never heard anything about that. They have, and that's fantastic. But what I think is regionally, people think, well, if I want to experience something related to the American Revolution and do that educational trip with my family, that I've got to go to Philadelphia and I've got to go to Boston. And if they do, they're going to have a great experience for sure. But they can come to York. And they can come to our colonial complex and see something that was really important. And again, getting, you know, this happened in September 1777. The British threatening Philadelphia. Second Continental Congress has to leave.
Okay.
They relocate first to Lancaster.
Okay.
And they realize that they're still too exposed, and they need to put this big, wide river between them and the British. And so they make their way across that, certainly before the winter comes in and starts to make it incredibly dangerous. And Second Continental Congress relocates to York.
To York.
Which is, yes.
That's major.
It is huge. And I like to think about, if I'm in York at this time, Yorktown is what it was called. And, you know, at that point, there had been men from York that had gone off to fight in this war that is far away. This is, you know, Philadelphia doesn't feel all that far away to us now, mm-hmm. right? Because of the way we can travel. But then that's a significant thing to think about New York and Massachusetts, and Long Island and all this. I mean, that's just, that's so far away, right? But now, this threat is there. The people that the British want just occupied your town.
Yeah. Why didn't they just say, hey, Adams County? I mean, it wouldn't have been Adams.
There wasn't anything.
York is it,
right? Yeah. You're going, and that's probably the furthest you were going to go in this area where you were still going to have any kind of infrastructure.
Right. And so, even that was difficult for them. They were used to Philadelphia where there was...
They came in fine clothes that people in Yorktown had not seen before, had access to.
Uh-huh.
They were accustomed to certain fineries that York wasn't accustomed or even equipped to provide.
Yeah.
And so that certainly created some tension. I mean, of course, York, you already had a lot of inflation because of what was happening in the colonies broadly. But now here in York, you're seeing a dramatic spike because the government comes and it uses resources. And so all these resources become scant. There are also some of these folks, because they're out here trying to survive, and now they have extraordinarily wealthy people to sell to. They're going to jack up the price.
Good.
Because they're trying to feed their children. Yeah. They're trying to do something to advance their life.
Mm-hmm.
So this happens, and that, you know, all of this creates tension. So when you look at some of the, you know, the congressmen writing about their experience in York, they don't always have the nicest things to say.
Right.
But they did come. They were safe while they were here. And to show that it really was a functioning government, I mean, they were carrying their printing press with them so that they can continue to produce leaflets. Money.
Yeah.
All of that is being produced in York.
We have samples
of some of that in our museum, some of the money produced there.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, the first thing I got hung up on is, you know, carrying a typewriter compared to carrying a computer compared to carrying a printing press.
Yeah.
You didn't carry a printer. Well, they had small ones, didn't they?
They weren't all monsters, right? But still,
Franklin's there.
I'm still glad that we have what we have.
Yeah.
You know, I think they'd be pretty jealous if they saw what we've got.
Yeah.
But all this infrastructure has to come with them
mm-hmm.
To set up and function.
Mm-hmm.
So that is there, and it runs like that through May of 1778.
You know, Ben, we're blessed here at Community Media to have a great relationship with New Oxford Historic Society.
Yes.
And we talk weekly about where we're going with the 250th anniversary projects that we're working on together. And I think one thing that Mike Shen said was one of the great things that happened because of the people of authority coming to York and it being so different from Philadelphia is they want to get things done so they can get out of York get back to where things were nice.
Absolutely true. Yeah, so. Absolutely true. And I think another thing that was really interesting is because we had a population out here that is certainly being impacted by the fact that there's a war with England. But we're not seeing combat. We're not seeing British troops come through and demand to be housed here in Yorktown. And I think that makes a this neat distinction. And there was this young man at the time. He's about 16 years old. This guy's name's John Adlam. And John Adlam is keeping a diary. And he writes about being in the town square. This is where George Street and Market Street are intersecting at the courthouse there. When John Smith, a local attorney from York, who is in Second Continental Congress, he comes back a few days after July 5th, July 4th, and he's going to read the Declaration of Independence to the people who have gathered. But before he reads it, John Adlam writes about how he gives a speech to explain what independence was. And that's when John Adlam realized he's looking at the crowd. He notes that it was, you know, really filled with many, many German women are there, you know, not the men, because the men are otherwise fighting or, you know, participating in the war somewhere else. But these folks don't really have an understanding of what is independence to somebody who's living out here, you know, from England. What do they care about who is king or who is president or whatever? It actually hit a stop for a moment and explain, you know, this is what we're fighting for. This is the war we have pulled you all into. Let me explain what that is. And then reads the Declaration of Independence to the crowd. And I thought, that is so profound. I had not really thought about that. You know, I certainly have studied the war long enough that I know that when I'm looking at those great bicentennial plates that shows everybody getting along and locked in arm in a cause, that wasn't real. I understood how complicated this war was. But that moment, reading this description of this moment from this boy who's living it at the time, this is happening for him at that moment, and thinking, not everybody knew what independence was. I take that for granted for sure. I think many others do. I just thought, wow, that is such an important thing to stop and consider.
You know, I might not even know what really independence is right now. You know?
it changes.
Because, you know, sometimes when those bills come in, I don't feel too independent. But, have you ever been a reenactor?
I have not. No. Never. Most people look at my beard and think, oh, you definitely. But I've never done it, no. I'm very glad that people do.
So you're not from this area, Ben.
No.
Can you talk about yourself a little bit?
Sure, yeah. My folks, they are from, when we're this far away, I say they're from Pittsburgh. When we get close to Pittsburgh, then I have to say, no, they're from McKeesport, my mother. Okay. My father's from Cannonsburg. So that's where they grew up. And when I was born, they were living in in Detroit, Michigan. And lived there till I was about seven. And then my dad, he worked for the JCPenney company. And so every time, you know, he started off as the manager of the sporting goods department, and as he moved up through the company, we'd end up in a different place.
Okay.
So I've lived in Connecticut, and I did live in the Pittsburgh area for a time, and then up in Syracuse, New York, where I lived for a long time. Even after my folks left, my dad's job actually ended up taking him to Hanover. So, and he's retired now. My folks are both retired, and they live here in Hanover.
They compared to all the other places.
Yeah, so they've been down here since about the mid-90s or so.
The snacks.
It was the snacks, because they live not far away from where you can smell it. You can smell the chips.
That could be anywhere, really.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, they've been very happy here. I have a brother who he had come down with them, and now he lives with his family in Carlisle.
Okay.
And I was still in upstate New York. I came down here because I had decided I wanted to shift careers. I had, my undergraduate degree was actually in marketing.
Okay.
And I had an entirely different world and envisioned for myself, but I just wasn't getting joy out of it. And I thought, I didn't want to try to survive till retirement. I wanted to do something that I love. And I thought, I'm going to go be a school teacher, and teach history, you know. And I wanted to be a really motivational teacher that they made a movie about one day because I was so great.
You so, probably dressed up in...
I was going to show up as George Washington in the classroom. I had all this vision in my head. And so coming down, there's a great program at Shippensburg University. So I came down here, left my job, and, I felt like I was... You know, Cortez coming to America and burning the ships. I'm like, I'm going down there, I'm leaving all this, and I'm going to make this work. And as part of that, I wanted to experience history, like, in the field. And my vision at the time was, like, and I'll bring that experience to the classroom. But once I got out in the field, I never went back to that. I was like, once I was there, and I was handed this list from, once I had an advisor, I was like, okay, listen, I want that... laid out, and he handed me this list, and it was alphabetical. A, Adams County Historical Society. So I was planning, I'm just going to call all these people until somebody takes me. But I called them, and they took me right away, and then I was like gum on their shoe. I was there for nearly 15 years.
Here in Adams County?
Yeah, I started, it was funny because I had this great vision, again, about what work I was going to do and the discoveries I was going to make. And I certainly had those experiences over the years, but my first job they gave me was pulling rusty staples out of old documents very carefully, putting these things into acid-free folders and relabeling them and putting them into boxes.
Did you?
And I loved it.
Did you? Did you save each staple and document it? I mean, this is from a document. Could have been a big fundraiser.
It could have been massive.
Yeah.
Oh, it was, the work just... The documents that I got to see as a result of that, I was just fascinated with it. And so thinking about what I was doing, and I was just like, this is what I want to do.
I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, go ahead.
I do that all. Okay. So every once in a while, you'd pull a staple, and then you'd read the document.
I would, read the document to determine, what it was, and so that I could label everything, and make it useful for researchers. It was all just preparing these documents for researchers and making sure the documents were stored in such a way that they would last.
And then from Adams County?
From Adams, I stayed there until I had been the executive director for, I think, about 7 years before I left. I went to Reading, Pennsylvania, to the Burks History Center, which was then their county historical society. Mm-hmm. And I worked there for about 5.5 years, almost 6 years maybe. And then the opportunity in York opened up. And that was really exciting to me. It was the organization I was familiar with because of my time in Adams.
Right.
And we would do things together periodically, take interns to visit each other and such. And it was always such a nice relationship. And I had an affinity for the place already. And I was aware of the project that had been completed with the new History Center, had seen the quality of it. And so it was an exciting thing to think about. And so I put my hat in the ring, and I'm very, very fortunate to be there now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So... you were a marketing director or a person?
Just wasn't for me. Yeah.
Then how did you choose history, did you say?
So it was funny, when I was majoring in marketing in school, marketing came with all these statistics classes that I found extraordinarily difficult, and it took so much time, energy, and focus from me. That all my electives, I took history classes because I found history to be enjoyable. I was already a museum goer, and read the books, and it was my hobby. And for some reason, I never had thought about it in any way as a career. Mm-hmm. It just never occurred to me. I followed my dad was a businessman, and so I was following in those footsteps. That was the direction I was going, and I was concerned when I was switching to history. I was like, I have this undergraduate degree in marketing. It's not an undergraduate degree in history. I'm going to be at a tremendous disadvantage. But I wasn't, because I got a chance to work with people who love teaching. And I loved learning. And the best place for a historian, I'll speak for myself. I love being in a place where I know enough to help people who are just starting, but I'm working with people that I have an ocean of facts to learn from. And just being in that spot where I get to be teacher and student, for me, is the sweet spot. I love being that. So it never was. And I think it actually then helped me in shaping my approach to history and going, okay, how can I take all of this and make this available to people and present it in a way that they want to take it in? And so that it ended up shaping a lot of my approach to the way I want programming to unfold or exhibits and storytelling to unfold.
So what's your vision for the York County Historic Center?
What I would like is I really want to make sure that we are growing and being seen as a regional attraction, because we have these themes. You do not need to be from York County to enjoy the museum experience there, because of how broad and the reach of the history of this area. You can be from anywhere and you're going to connect to it. And I want to make sure that we are getting that out there. I'm just so impressed by the new History Center Museum. And I want to bring that level of quality and storytelling to each of our sites. And so, and I want these sites, I want, as you go through, I want learning outcomes that are unique to each site, but I also, when you're done with your experience through our museum system here, I want you to be able to walk away with, you know, understanding the role of this community in events like the American Revolution and the American Civil War, but not just wars, about in manufacturing that was everything from medicine to bottle making, that paper making, just all these things that are shipped from here out into the world and coming back to us as the products that we know, love, and sustain us. That's coming out of York, and I want people to know that.
So I want to thank you for coming in here and speaking with us. And I'm real excited that I feel this isn't the last time we're going to work together.
I hope not.
Right? And, you know, the relationship we have with the New Oxford Historic Society is amazing.
They're all right, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think they're making a big difference in the county, too, because, you know, we're sitting here talking to you because of them.
Yes.
And I think they're very instrumental in bringing the county together. And I'm sure that these relationships that they're doing is going to continue. And I'm hoping that community media is a part of that also. So I do want to extend an invitation that if you guys come up with any ideas down there of how we could help you, please reach out. Please reach out.
All right. We'll certainly talk again.
And I could go on, but I don't want to break any records for how long I've spoken to one person. Is there anything, Ben Neely, who is the president and CEO of the York County Historic Center, is there anything, first of all, what events for the 250th should we be aware of that's happening there?
I want to see everybody showing up for our exhibit this summer. So make sure that you're planning to come and see the new exhibit there. You're going to see some incredible artifacts that are not on display right now. They're going to get their chance to come out and work together to tell a story. I want to see everybody come to our Articles of Confederation Day that will be in November. We are going to be celebrating the first formalized form of government that we had in this country and its adoption, you know, at York. And to come to the colonial complex, there's going to be loads of different reenactors and artisans and amazing storytelling happening there, lots of things to do. I want to make sure everybody's getting out to that.
And if you're looking at dates and you're looking at some more details and clarifications of all this, where can people go to find that?
Go to yorkhistorycenter.org, or you follow us on Facebook at York History, and you can see all of our events happening there. All of our promotion is there, and so it's you can fill your calendar.
You had a love of history. What's the first moment in your life that you realized that you were interacting with the beauty and the excitement and the joy in your heart? Do you remember?
I do. I have a very clear memory of when I first really got bit by the history bug. I'm very fortunate to have met both my great-grandmothers. It's incredible to me that I knew people that were born in the 1800s. My great-grandmother's house, I was going through photos and books and such, and a photo falls out of a book, and it is a photo of a Civil War soldier who turned out to be my great-great-great-great-uncle. His name was John McNutt, and he fought in Company G, 140th Pennsylvania, and he was killed on July 2nd, 1863 at the Battle of Gettysburg. He's buried in a marked grave in the National Cemetery. But just as a little boy, I mean, eight years old or so, like, I had a family member who was in this, and that sense of connection just was incredible to me.
Gave you some new identity, didn't it?
Absolutely did, and I needed to know more and more and more about it. And so I just got the fever then.
Where were you living at this time? I mean, your grandparents living.
Yeah, they were in, they were living in Peters Township, Pennsylvania.
And that's where your grandfather, who was the Civil War vet who died there, is that where he was from?
He was from Cannonsburg, just next door, yeah.
All the way out there around Pittsburgh.
Yep.
Made his way first to Gettysburg, and now here you are.
Trained at Camp Curtin in Harrisburg, and died in Gettysburg.
Thanks for coming in and sharing your passion.
Absolutely.
And everything you're doing down in York.
Thank you for having me.
Not a problem. Is there anything you'd like to say before we close?
I think I have said it all. I think I have changed lives.
There you go. And you know what? You will continue to do that as people watch this show. And you do the things that you're doing, and you may not even know it. But thank you for doing that.
You're very kind.
And that's why you're here on this show. Because, you know, here at Open House, we bring people in who are doing fantastic things, not only because they're getting paid, but because it's their passion. Thank you so much for that passion.
You're welcome. Thank
Ben,
you.
Thank you. Thanks for watching this segment of Open House here in Community Media. We were speaking with Ben Neely. He is the president and CEO of the York County Historic Center. And I didn't skip a beat when I said that time, Ben. So thank you for watching this. And until we have a chance to bring another awesome individual like Ben, and there's a couple of people like you out there, Ben.
Many, yes.
You know, of course, you know, I don't think there's a cure for being bit by the history bug.
No.
You know, I think it just gets stronger and stronger as you go.
That's right.
Thanks again for coming in. Thanks for watching this show. Remember, you are the best.